On the other end of our phone line this morning is an amazing human being. He's been through everything, including, are you ready for this? Yeah, he dropped dead two times. Twice he dropped dead, but he's still here to tell us about it. He was on his way to becoming a top orthopedic surgeon to the elite athletes when he was struck by a heart attack while playing basketball. Disability, depression popped in, but at some point he turned it all around, and now he's majorly successful, way beyond what his hopes and dreams were way back when, and they were pretty high at the time. We're talking about Dr. Herman Williams. Good morning, Dr. Williams. How are you today?
Good morning, Paul. How are you today? I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, glad to hear that, and thank you for asking and doing well here. Now, you're based out of Nashville, Tennessee, right? One of the music capitals of the world. How's life down there?
Nashville is fantastic. It's been incredibly welcoming to me and my family, and I never thought I'd be here in Nashville, Tennessee, growing up in Southern California.
So. That's true. A little bit of a different lifestyle, different change. And I've talked to a number of people in the music industry scattered throughout the country, six of them all together, all of whom relocated to Nashville. They said, you know, if you want to be in the business, that's the place right now to be.
Right.
So they can go door to door and peddle their songs. And, you know, you can't do that from Utah or Detroit or Columbus, Ohio. You got to be where the players are, I guess, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So you've come out with a new book now, Clear, you know, big capital letters with an exclamation point, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of, which is exactly what you've done. You didn't dream of dropping dead. you dreamt of being an orthopedic surgeon, top of the line, and to some elite athletes. So, Dr. Herman Williams, why don't you just tell us about your story and about your book, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of.
Sure, Paul. Thank you. And it's an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to share with your listeners. You know, I don't think I'm any different from many people. I had huge dreams that, you know, at age 16, if you had asked me what I wanted to be, and I said, I want to be the team doctor for the Los Angeles Lakers, you would have said, yeah, right. And I want to be president of the United States.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, it was a very far-reaching dream, and I've had a long journey with many detours and many lessons. Some that I've embraced and others that I've resisted. But I think as I reflect now on this point in my life, it was a true challenge to set out to become a surgeon. Of course, at first I thought I was serious, but I kind of played around in college and didn't do what I was supposed to do and actually applied to medical school twice and was rejected both times. Mm. And finally, a young man came into my life who was a young physician and kind of slapped me around and said, look, if you're going to get serious about this, you need to get your stuff together.
Yeah.
And you need to retake your science courses again and devote a year of your life to basically getting yourself back on track, which I accepted. And I was able to get into a program called the Post-Baccalaureate Program at Creighton University, which changed my life. Mm. I literally improved all of my scores in college. Well, my post, I'd already had a college degree, so I improved my pre-med courses and knocked the MCAT, which is the medical college admission test, out of the water and got into five medical schools. And I was on my way, Paul. I mean, now all of a sudden this dream became one of, you know what, if you plot this course correctly and you put your nose to the grindstone, you know, this might happen.
Yeah.
And so while I was in medical school, I met the team doctor for the Los Angeles Rams, Dr. Clarence Shields, who took me in for a rotation. And I mean, I really got a chance to see what it was like to be a team doctor for a major professional team. And I set out to apply to get into an orthopedic surgery residency, which at that time was pretty difficult. And I, you know, again, I told my friends I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you're crazy. Nobody gets into orthopedics. And I was like, well, somebody gets into orthopedics. It might as well be me.
That's right.
You know, I was relentless. I did not give up. And I met another great orthopedic surgeon when I was doing my, I took a year off from medical school and did a master's in public health at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And I met a famous orthopedic surgeon, Augustus White, who in his own right, he was the first African-American to go to med school at Stanford University. He was one of the first African-American orthopedic department chairs at Yale and at Harvard. And he and I hit it off. We wrote a research paper together. We got it published. And I really think he single-handedly changed my trajectory. And when I applied to school and said I was a mentor or mentee of Gus White, I think that made a difference. And I ultimately got into my orthopedic surgery training program. And so, I mean, the blocks were just falling into place. All I had to do was my piece. I had to, you know, study. I had to be sincere. I already had what I thought was a great bedside manner. I got great feedback from patients. And the last straw that I had to put in place, that last building block, was to apply to the Curlin Joe Sports Medicine Fellowship in Los Angeles, California. And that the Curlin Joe Clinic, they took care of almost all of the teams in Los Angeles, the Angels, the Lakers, the Kings, mm-hmm. and the Rams. And I figured if I got that fellowship, then it was just a matter of time before I was going to be the team doctor of a major professional sports team. Mm-hmm. In April of my third year out of 4 years of orthopedic surgery, I was getting ready to be a chief resident. I sent in my application, and I remember sending a letter to Clarence Shields telling him, Dr. Shields, please look out for my application. I'm applying to the Curlin Joe Sports Medicine Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And roughly a few weeks after I sent my application in, I was playing basketball with a group of fellow physician colleagues who just happened to be anesthesiologists, and Paulie dropped dead on the basketball court.
Oh, wow.
Everything came to a screeching halt. I died on the basketball court. Wow. But there were two things I did that day that made a difference. And one of them was I took my wife, and my wife was a scorekeeper, mm-hmm. who saw me collapse on the sideline. And quite frankly, we typically didn't have a scorekeeper. And if she hadn't been there, those guys probably would have kept on playing basketball and,
oh, wow.
and laughing. And at the end of the game, they would have come over and I would have been dead on the sideline.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But she screamed at the top of her lungs. Yeah. And these four anesthesia residents, who all they do is resuscitate patients at the trauma facility where we trained, started CPR immediately. And they told me later, they would tell me that, you know, your pupils were dilated, you were turning purple. And we were like, we don't even know why we're doing this, but we're not going to stop. We're going to keep on doing CPR.
Oh, wow.
The emergency response team got there and the EMTs pulled out the defibrillator and they told everybody get out of the way. And they said, clear. And the defibrillator did not work.
Oh, boy.
And so they had to resume CPR
no,
for another 3 minutes until finally the fire department got there with a defibrillator. And after all that time, we think maybe anywhere from 5 to 8 minutes, they were finally able to bring me back.
Wow. Now, obviously, I'm not a physician, so I don't know the ins and outs, but isn't that an incredibly long time to be?
That is.
Yeah.
That is an incredibly long time. And what that means is, you know, the key to CPR is applying enough pressure to mimic what the heart would be doing. And so the key is they must have been doing it so effectively. They were getting blood to my brain and they were maintaining me until they were able to shock the heart back into a normal rhythm.
Wow. I'm going to continue with this in just a moment, but I do need to remind our listeners, you're listening to Dr. Paul's Family Talk on Impact Radio USA. This morning, we're talking to Dr. Herman Williams out of Nashville, Tennessee now, who's come out with his new book, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of, on his way to becoming a top orthopedic surgeon. Dropped dead twice in his life. We're talking about the first time on the basketball court at age 31. totally changed his life. Still is a doctor, but he's done some other things, a much bigger and grander scale than he had originally planned. And Dr. Herman Williams, how can our listeners get a hold of your book today?
They can get a hold of the book on my website, clearlivingthelife.com. It's also available online in the Barnes & Noble store, and it's also available at amazon.com.
Okay, very good. Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of, and Clear came from the, it was the fire department people with the defibrillator that didn't work? Or was it the people?
Yeah,
that,
so the Clear is sort of a double meaning, and one is, of course, that's what they say before they shock anyone when they're trying to resuscitate them, because if anybody's touching the patient when they shock the patient, you'll get shocked also.
Ah,
so that's
okay.
A universal word for everyone to get out of the way. But it's also called, I think it identifies the clarity of life that I attained by going through all these experiences and understanding what I believe my mission in life is. And it really has come about as a result of all these traumatic situations that I've experienced.
Okay. Well, I guess one of the lessons is, if you're going to play basketball, make sure other doctors are on your team.
There you go.
That'll help. At least they know what
That's
to do.
Right.
And have your wife there too, so she can scream at the doctors, "Hey, my husband is down for the count. Do something." And that helps.
That's right. That's right. You've got to be selective, I was just going to say, because if you have a bunch of orthopedic surgeons, they'll probably crack your chest and kill you. So it's got to be somebody who knows something about CPR.
That's right. That's great. And you've described your book, or it's been described as both a memoir and a how-to guide designed to help the reader create their own best life possible. And that gets me excited, too. Including a kindness scale, which you say urges readers to do activities from a simple smile to major, perform CPR, that will have an impact, a positive impact on other people's lives. So how did you transform all of that? You're about to become a top orthopedic surgeon with perhaps, a major league sports organization. And suddenly, what happened after that? Just kind of take us through that.
Well, I probably immediately went into denial. Mm-hmm. That I had a major cardiac anomaly. It turned out it was a genetic disease that went undetected, that typically presents in people's 30s. So it just spontaneously appeared, and it manifested itself as a cardiac arrest. You know, there's so many blessings that, again, I can only identify retrospectively, because at the time I didn't realize it, but while I was in the hospital, I developed an infection from the central line they put in my veins to give me fluids because they did it on the basketball court. Mm-hmm. I developed pneumonia as a consequence from not being able to move because of the CPR. Mm-hmm. And so I basically spent 10 days just kind of on antibiotics, trying to figure out what were the next steps. And a physician came in my room and told me, "Hey, look, we've got this new technology. It's called a surgically implantable defibrillator, and you meet the criteria for the clinical trials. Would you like to have this defibrillator? We can put it in your chest surgically, and you'll never have to call 911 again. Mm. Anytime your heart has a bad rhythm, this device will automatically shock you until it shocks you out of your bad rhythm."
Wow.
Well, that sounded like a great idea. I mean, yeah. I figured this was a one-time thing and it'd be a nice backup.
Yeah.
Well, what I didn't realize is that this was a pretty significant arrhythmia. Mm-hmm. The research was not well at that time. This is 1991. And so The treatment is to give a person an antiarrhythmic medication as the primary therapy, and the defibrillator is supposed to be the backup.
Okay.
But we kept having to increase the dosage because I kept having arrhythmias. And, long story short, Paul, I was shocked 45 times
Oh my gosh.
In the first 6 weeks of having the device.
Oh, boy.
until we finally got the medication to a level where it was the primary therapy and not the defibrillator. And I can tell you, I was awake for every one of those shots.
Oh, boy.
You know, some people, their heart beats super fast and they pass out and they get shocked. But no, not Herman. I could tolerate a rapid heart rate, so I was awake through every one of those shocks. And finally, after about 6 months, we found a medication that worked. And we had to change that over the next 3 years. But what I learned is to really find my faith in God. And I learned that I was married to an incredible woman who was incredibly strong and was there for me. And together, these two young newlyweds, because we were engaged and we were set to be married 3 months after the cardiac arrest occurred. And we just began our life together handling this trauma, and we basically rebuild our lives. And I built a new dream, which is my message to the listeners, is that, you know, you can always build a new dream.
Yeah.
The one you think is the dream that you're going to end up being. For most people, maybe 75-80%, maybe that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But for others, you end up in a place where you never had any idea.
Yeah, we talked a little off air about that. You in this case, but other people too, you know, you have plans and dreams and hopes, and you're putting all of your energy and facilities into it. And God tries to tell you, hey, Herman, that's not what I had in mind for you. I want you to do something much bigger and much greater. And either you didn't listen or you didn't hear. I've been in the same situation, so have others. And finally, he said, you know, okay, doggone it, Herman. I guess I'm going to have to.
Right, we're going to have to get serious here.
You're going to have to kill you with a heart attack on the basketball court. Maybe then you'll listen to me. Now, you've gone on to managing director of the BDO Nashville Healthcare Advisory Practice, and which is far greater than being a sole physician, although that's a huge deal too. But what is the Nashville Healthcare Advisory Practice?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to be asked to lead the healthcare practice here in Nashville, which by many people's standards is really the healthcare, you know, mecca of the world. There are over 138 healthcare firms here. There are, you know, 10 or 12 national headquarters for several healthcare organizations. And so this is truly a dream come true to be in this market, but to also be able to provide services nationally as well. But Paul, this has, you know, been given to me after really an incredible 18-year career as a physician executive for several healthcare hospital companies. And so, you know, I went back and got my MBA and started as a healthcare consultant, and then one of my clients hired me, and then I ended up in hospital operations until just recently, 2018, and then I finally transitioned to where I am now. But it has truly been a blessing, and like you said, I never could have imagined having the opportunity to build a practice in a city like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dream job.
Yeah.
So just really blessed.
Well, at age 31, you know, right before you made your final jump shot, or I don't know if you dunked the basketball before your last dunk, you had no aspirations, probably didn't even enter your mind to do what you're doing now. You would plan to be an orthopedic surgeon, major sports team, and that's going to be Dr. Herman Williams' life, and he's going to love every second of it.
Exactly.
And so then all this came around and changed him. I want to remind our listeners to listen to Dr. Paul's Family Talk on Impact Radio USA. This morning, we're hearing a fascinating story from Dr. Herman Williams out of Nashville, Tennessee. Dropped dead twice. How about that? How many people can say that, Dr. Williams, do you think? I've dropped dead twice, and by the way, I'm very alive and very successful. I can't imagine too many people have that backstory. At least I hope not.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because the first one was so long ago that I had begun to live life as if I didn't have a cardiac issue. And what that means is, you know, people who have cardiac problems are always at risk for having another cardiac arrest. Of course, I had a 28-year run with no problems. I was in 2017, I was in the airport in Nashville waiting for a flight in the Delta Crown room, getting a boiled egg and a bagel and minding my own business. And I remember walking in, seeing a gentleman. He was very nice, and he said good morning, and I said good morning, and the last thing I heard was, are you okay?
Oh boy.
And apparently I grabbed my chest and went down, and Paul, there was a woman behind me who ran up and caught me. Now, I'm on a blood thinner because that's what people who have arrhythmias have to be on, blood thinners, because you can form clots if you have abnormal rate. So if this woman hadn't caught me, I could have fallen and hit my head and had a subdural hematoma or, you know, who knows. But this woman happened to be there. She broke my fall. And this gentleman, who would later tell me that he hadn't done CPR in 40 years, and he learned it when he was a lifeguard, made the decision that he's going to save someone's life today.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
You know, if you have to really think about what that means. You have made a decision that you're going to jump down and do CPR on someone. And really, the outcome is significantly dependent on you. And so it's a huge responsibility. Of course, we're encouraging everybody, you can make a difference, and to do, you can do hands only CPR, but just do something. But it's a huge responsibility at the end of the day. And this gentleman went down and did CPR, and he told me he was doing CPR, and all of a sudden my eyes rolled up in the back of my head and I stopped breathing.
Oh my God.
He said, oh my God, I started pumping harder, harder, harder.
Oh no.
And he said, all of a sudden you just went and gasped breath and came back.
Yeah.
And that reminded me, I had forgotten how fragile life is, and I had forgotten the importance of the humanism of life that sort of extends beyond race. You know, a lot of us are caught up in race, and, you know, when somebody makes a decision to go down and save another person's life, it now it's about human beings.
Yeah.
And it was it had an amazing transformation on me again. And to see my wife at work watching me basically decompensate after not having experienced this for 28 years and just guiding me back to a place of peace and acceptance has really actually changed our relationship.
Yeah, all about so. Yeah,
because you know, you take advantage of the relationship and the person. You know, you have some really strong lessons, and you've committed, and you know each other. You know, you have the sign language, you know.
Yeah.
There's the look. I know what that means, you know.
That's right. Well, I've told my kids before, anytime we've gone through a bad time, you know, whether it's a health issue or whatever, you know, sometimes things are devastating, like your situation. After we've made it through and life is good again, I said, you know, I've said many times, you know, when I'm 85 years old, sitting around a campfire, sipping on some coffee and eating some marshmallows, I'm going to tell this story, and it's going to be funny as heck. It's not funny now, but it'll be really funny in a whole bunch of years. And so it's kind of our go-to, like, Dad, is that going to be a campfire story someday? Yeah, when I'm 85, we'll tell that story. We'll laugh all night long. And but wow, your stories are just incredible. I'm not sure if they'll ever be truly funny, but they'll continue to be more amazing.
You know, they really, you know, I really have embraced humor.
Good.
The book talks a lot about how funny these situations are. I mean, I'll share one really super quick with you.
Yeah.
I remember once where actually my heart went into an abnormal rhythm, and I was getting shocked. I was a hospital administrator, and they yell over the PA system, code blue in the administrative offices, code blue.
Yeah.
And, you know, the doctors would later tell me, and we were hoping it was the CEO. But, but this guy shows up, you know, from the cardiology lab. And he says, Dr. Williams, I need you to get on the stretcher. Mm. And I'm frozen because my heart's beating and I'm focusing. I'm trying not to get excited so I won't get shocked, and I cannot move.
Oh, boy.
And I'm looking at this guy, and he's like 6'5", and just muscles ripped and everything. And all I could think of was, damn, he's buff.
Well, there you go.
At that moment, that was just all I could think of, you know?
Right. There's your campfire story someday.
Exactly. So the book is full of humor, and it embraces humor because that is, you know, a way of taking it all in and learning from it. So
very good. We're talking to Dr. Herman Williams, his book Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of. Just an amazing story we've heard so far. And Dr. Herman Williams, before we go, could you tell us a little bit, because you included in your book the kindness scale has an impact on everybody, the people doing it, the people receiving it. Maybe just give us a few points about what your kindness scale is all about.
I believe that it was important for me to develop what I call the ABCs of life. And I used ABCs because that's the way we're taught. CPR is, you know, first check the airway, then check the breathing, and then check circulation to see if you can detect a pulse.
Mm-hmm.
So my ABCs are: A is really just accept the fact that you have a condition. Don't be defined by it. Don't be limited by it. Don't, you know, people wanted to call me a cardiac cripple. I refuse to be defined by my heart disease, and I constantly challenge myself to do things that, you know, physically are challenging.
Mm-hmm.
B is breathing, and that really embraces the whole concept of take a deep breath and relax.
Mm-hmm.
So it talks about the importance of relaxation in life. And C is living a life of compassion. And I've had friends tell me, I understand compassion, I think, I just don't know how to be compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I came up with this kindness scale, which kind of lets people know it's a graded scale. So number one talks about the simplicity and the importance of a smile.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I mean, a smile is contagious.
Yeah.
You can walk down the street and somebody will smile at you and you'll smile back at them, and
Right. You'll
just notice, God, I just feel better because, you know, thank you for that. People will smile at me and I'll literally stop them and say, thank you for that smile. And that didn't cost anything, right?
Yeah.
And we'll laugh, you know. So the most basic is a smile. The next is actually doing something physical, like opening a door,
mm-hmm.
helping someone on a plane. I do a lot of traveling. I always help people, you know, get their bags settled. It's amazing how folks will sit and watch an elderly woman or a mom who's got, you know, three bags and five kids and, you know, trying to put, and everyone's like, boy, she's struggling, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I've committed myself to help others. I've done things, and I've actually had things done to me by others. I remember I used to always talk about buying coffee for the person behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I literally had someone buy a cup of coffee for me and sped away. And I came up to the drive up and the guy said, yeah, the woman just in front of you just bought you coffee. Congratulations. Have a great day.
Oh, so, wow.
You know, those are things that make, I mean, that just changes your day. And so
it does, yeah.
And so it grades all the way up to the most ultimate level of kindness. Of course, CPR is one of those. And another great story that my wife told me that I just found was incredible is a woman who donated her kidneys to someone that she didn't even know because she was compatible.
Is that something else? And
yeah. I mean, you may need that kidney someday, but to say I am going to trust in God that I'm not going to need this kidney. We only need one, or we can get by with one. And I'm going to give mine to somebody else who needs it. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And can make a difference in someone's life.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff.
Yeah, your kindness skill and just being nice and kind to others, it's amazing. It not only does it help them and make their day, but it makes your day too when you give, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you today. Again, Dr. Herman Williams, we want you to get his brand new book. It's come out recently, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of. What an amazing story, as you've heard during this interview. I dropped dead twice and has lived to tell about it in very big ways. Leadership, personal coaching, now author, also a physician and a medical administrator. And what a fascinating life you've led. What an amazing career. And not only will you have funny stories to tell at that campfire when you're 85, but you'll have meaningful stories to tell as well, won't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's really been an honor talking to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. Now, before we go, can you tell our listeners again how they can get a hold of your book, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of?
Yes, at clearlivingthelife.com. You can order it online if you want a signed copy, or you can order it at the Barnes & Noble online bookstore or the Amazon.com bookstore as well.
All right. Well, great. It's been great to have you. And if you want to come back on someday, if you come out with another book or just want to continue telling this story, I'd love to hear more about it. Just give us a call. We'll get you back on.
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it.
All right, you bet. Check out his book, Clear, Living the Life You Didn't Dream Of, Dr. Herman Williams. Thank you, Dr. Williams. And you go out there and have a great day. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you. Be kind to somebody.
You got Bye-bye. It. Thank you.